Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Tuesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXE Acre 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better. Today's guest is Don Skimmerhorn. Don was born during the original Woodstock, the youngest of three boys, with a bell in his mouth. He was awarded the Brian Yeager Award for Music and Sports in high school and graduated from Adirondack Community College with an Associate's in Arts. He was a radio DJ in college at WGFR in the Glens Falls region. Aside from sports and theater, he also has an interest in hot air balloons. Don has worked in the security field for well over 20 years. He has worked for the New York State Department of Parks and Restoration and Historic Preservation, and is currently a site supervisor of security at the Van Rensselaer Manor in Troy, New York. He lives in Cairo, New York, with his wife and daughter. Don and his daughter will be performing at Carnegie Hall for the 200th anniversary of Concordia College in New York City. Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
Now, Don, can I ask you a question as I was listening to that there?
Sure.
You were born with a bell in your mouth. What's that all about?
Well, I was born in 1969, and my family volunteered a lot in the local church. And one of the things that the youth like to do there at the church is to sing in the choir and ring in the bells. So I was taught at an early age, at I would say probably two, to start ringing handbells. And basically, I've been doing it ever since. I mean, I've had a few years on and off, but I currently do it with my daughter at the local church in Cairo.
Brilliant. And then you might be seeing there you're going to be performing in the Carnegie Hall.
Yep, that's a selective thing that the Concordia College is celebrating their 200th anniversary this year, and they wanted to have a concert of 200 voices, both youth and also adults. So you have two separate concerts, or actually it's one concert, but two choirs. And It's really going to be impressive, because not only are we practicing at the college, but the concert's going to be at Carnegie Hall. And just to be there, just to see the hall itself is just amazing. And to be a performer there is just going to be like on cloud nine. It's just going to be awesome.
Yeah, I've been in there once. I saw my girlfriend Julia got tickets for one of the surgeons in the hospital she works in, was conducting a performance in. Boy, is it a fantastic theatre, you know, and you're right. We went to the Carnegie Deli beforehand for lunch, which is closing down.
I heard that. Yeah. I could not believe it.
Yeah, it's closing down very, very soon.
Yeah,
we went there, then we went into the Carnegie Theatre, and one of the things I noticed and remember is there's free Ricola cough.
Oh yeah, the Ricola commercial
sweets.
Yeah.
In little stations before you go into the aisles, and I think it's to prevent people from coughing during the performances.
Yeah,
it's quite interesting, but it's a lovely, lovely theatre. Have you ever been there, Mike?
I've never been to Carnegie Hall. I did make a point to go to the Carnegie Deli. I saw a program about
get your priorities right there, Mike.
This is an excellent story. I went to I saw a program on lunch meat. And they talked about the is it the corned beef at the Carnegie Deli? Is that what they're known for?
Yeah, pastrami?
I think it's pastrami.
Pastrami.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I got to try one of these sandwiches. And you know, to be honest, the experience wasn't that great.
I walked in and I remember standing in line and the sandwiches were massive.
Yeah, and the manager in the program says people should not be able to take a bite out of the sandwich. They shouldn't be able to fit the sandwich in their mouth, and there should be food left over. If either of those things don't happen correctly, then they haven't done their job.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, because we were standing in line. I said to Julia, let's just get one of these sandwiches between the two of us. Because, this is like a mountainous amount of food.
Like two pounds of animal muscle.
Yeah. And you know, the one thing that was great about it was all the pictures of the notables over the years who'd been in the place, you know. And you know that when you sit down, that you're possibly sitting in a seat that maybe Frank Sinatra,
that's one thing. That's why I'm taking it to heart, just to know that other professionals have sung there in years past, and for me to be there is just phenomenal.
Listen, when you're 63 or 68 or 75, you can say, Hey, I performed at the Carnegie Hall,
yeah,
by the way.
That's amazing. Yes. You know? What an opportunity.
So well done. Yes. You should be proud of yourself for that.
Yeah, and my daughter at 13, she doesn't realize really history.
She will in years to come.
Right, yeah. She will. And, you know, so that's going to be a fun time.
Brilliant. Did Def Leppard ever perform at Carnegie Hall?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, that is a good question, but...
Well, that's one for you to look up.
What's that?
That's one for you to look up.
Yeah.
Why are you asking that?
Well, because Don's first song is Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard.
I see.
And I thought, boy, wouldn't that be one heck of a connection? But I kind of am inclined to think they probably...
Well, there was a funny story behind that, only because I went to college up in Adirondack Community College in Glens Falls, and there's a lake up there, Lake George, that is very popular in the summer, and obviously in the wintertime too. One day we were hanging out by the beach, and I saw this gentleman on a stand-up jet ski, not one of the sit-downs.
Well, it wasn't the drummer, I'll tell you that. There you go.
And there was a gentleman driving this jet ski, and he had one arm.
Oh, it was the drummer.
At the time, I'm like, I can't even do that with two arms, let alone one. And I actually walked by the beach where he was, and I introduced myself, and he said, yeah, we're performing at the Glens Falls Civic Center tonight. And I'm like, who are you? And I didn't even really put two and two together.
Right.
And then he told me, oh, I'm the drummer of Def Leppard. And I'm like, no way. So I was like impressed that I got to meet this gentleman. And
Just for people who are listening don't know what we're talking about, can you tell them what happened to the guy? Why has he only got one arm?
He was in a car accident years ago, and he had his arm for a while, and then sepsis set in, and they had to eventually, take it.
Right.
I mean, we didn't really get into that whole deal. I mean, we did for a few minutes.
You don't only meet the guy on the jet ski, you know?
Yeah, I was just impressed he was driving the jet ski.
I mean, I read up on this story, and... the drummer lost his arm, obviously, in Sheffield, I think it was. And England.
It's north of England.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Mike, try to show his geographical prowess there.
Yeah.
he's got the map in the back of his head.
Steel town. So he then began, he was sent away for like 3 months to learn how to play the drums by using his feet and one arm.
Yeah.
And,
he knew how to do the drums with both feet and hands at before he even lost his arm. Change the pedals and everything for the feet to do certain other things. Sure. Yeah, I'm sure that took some time to get used to.
And when he came back and prove yourself type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know that the rest of the band members were putting into question that they didn't want him to be there, but. You know, he had to obviously prove that he could still cut it at a certain level. He did, and it proved it. I remember the front man was saying, you know, it proved to be like quite an emotional moment, you know, we realised everything's okay, you know, we're all right, he's fine, you know.
Wow, amazing.
It's one of those bands. I know that Pour Some Sugar on Me is your first song. Phenomenal band in terms of record sales alone, you know, about 100 million sales.
The Pyromania album, I believe it was called. The reason why that's one of my favorite songs is because that song really, you know, brings out the whole pedal thing with the feet and the hand,
right?
You know, to the point where it just blows me away. Right. And I have seen them in concert too.
See them?
Down in New York City. Right. Down at Madison Square Garden, and they have an awesome laser show too.
Like a
was Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard, the English Southern, the Northern band, as Mike accurately pointed out earlier.
From Sheffield.
That's kind of a Liverpool accent.
Oh, sorry.
Kind of London now.
Old chum.
Yeah, a great band in terms of, you know, what they did, their talent, and their, you know, obviously people liked them because they sold 100 million records.
Yes.
So, yeah, and they're in a slew of, you know, top 100 band lists. Mm-hmm. So they're obviously a good band. Now, I don't know if you've ever watched in the television, Don, there's this program called Speakeasy.
Speakeasy? I've heard of it, yeah.
And they do these, it's like notables, music icons, and they just basically sit and chat with each other.
Yeah.
And one of the ones I did see was the front man from Def Leppard talking to another guy who I can't remember who it was, to be honest with you. But if you maybe go online and look it up, might be something worth watching for you.
Yeah.
And it was quite an interesting discussion. I watched the whole thing, so it was good. So shall we move on to the next item?
The next item is a photo album of your family.
Yeah, obviously family means everything to me, as it should for everyone. You know, you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. I've always thought of that in the back of my mind. And, you know, whenever we have holiday parties or Labor Day parties, a big thing for us, we have over 100 people that come to our house.
Wow. 100 people?
Yeah, it's not just family, of course, it's friends. But, you know, we always open ourselves up to, you know, open the house up to friends and family, and we just love it.
You know, it's my friend George's birthday a few days ago, and in Scotland, Scotland's 5 hours ahead, Britain's 5 hours ahead, and it was 7 o'clock on the 13th of, you know, well, it was the 12th here, but it was midnight in Scotland, in Britain, and I text George because it was his birthday, and I said, happy birthday, mate, miss you. But I refer to him as my brother, you know. And it was funny because a couple of hours later, I was watching the television, you know, and Barack Obama was given, what do you call him, the vice?
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden. He was given Joe Biden the Congressional Medal of Honor, I think it was.
Yeah, that's the for the military. It was like the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Medal of Freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was such an emotional moment, and he put the medal around his neck, and he said, and he referred to him as his brother, you know. And I think sometimes when you meet people that are close and special, that they do feel like family, you know. And I think family to me is a circle of people that you absolutely trust. You
know? Yes, oh, so, yeah, you have to.
And if you've got 100, then you must be blessed, because that's fantastic to have 100 people at your house.
Yeah, well, yeah, when we do the parties, every other year we usually do a pig roast, and because it gets to be kind of expensive after a while when you do that every year. But and this year, of course, we're still planning, you know, to have the Labor Day party as well. But between now and then, we're going to be planning on building a pool. So hopefully there'll be more activities for people to do, as long as it's a warm day.
And is it
going to
be an outdoor pool?
Outdoor pool,
in-ground pool?
No, it's going to be above ground pool. Right. We're planning on building a big deck, you know, so people can hang out and just
And
chill.
This is you and your immediate family, or...?
No, this is going to be for everyone. I mean, it's the immediate family, yes, but for the other 100 and some people that are usually invited, and, you know...
Wow.
There
you are, Mike. We look forward to that.
I can't wait.
You know, because obviously after this, we're going to be close friends.
I think so.
But I don't want to see you guys in a Speedo, though, so a pair of shorts. All right.
I have an American flag Speedo that I'm proud of. And if other people aren't comfortable with it, then that's on them.
Actually, I have a gold Mankini. So we're okay.
Nice.
So we're okay.
Yeah, very nice. Now, is that one of the single-piece things?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it requires waxing, I think.
Sure.
Right.
Well, you got to be presentable.
Yeah. Yeah, there will be kids there.
Let's move on. Now, your next song, Don, is Brick House.
Brick House by the Commodores,
yeah. Yes. Tell us about it. What does it mean to you?
Years ago when I was out of college, I found myself looking for jobs, and I did obtain a job, but I was only working part-time. So I opted to spend a little bit of money, and I started my own portable DJ business called Sidetrax DJ Service. I no longer have it anymore, but that was one of the songs that always stuck out in my mind to whatever party you were at, whether you were at a 70th birthday party or a wedding or whatever. You played that song and people just get out on the dance floor and just have some fun.
Now, did you know that when the name of the band was chosen, it was chosen randomly from a dictionary, right? And the band lucked out because one of them quipped in the message that I have, or the note that I have. He says, to choose a new name, William Wack King opened the dictionary and randomly picked a word. We lucked out, he remarked with a laugh when telling the story to People magazine. We almost became the Commodes.
The Commodes. No, I didn't know that.
Now, another story is that the phrase brick house, there's a word missing, starts in S and ends in T, right?
Yeah.
A brick. And when the song is sung, there is a gap to signify the word that's missing.
Yeah.
And it's a horn that's there. So, it's a brick. Bow. House.
Yeah.
So did you know that?
No, I did not.
So the word SH is replaced by a horn.
Yeah. But it's funny, by doing that, it gives the song, I think, more of a funky kind of feel.
It does, yeah.
You know, it totally works.
But you know, I love little things like that because you don't realize all these wee things until you dig deeper, you know.
Yeah, right.
So tell us about this DJing. Where did you do it and how long did you do it for?
I did it for approximately about 8 to 10 years. I did it by myself for a while, and then my wife started joining with me. She kind of like was my roadie, if you want to call it that.
Did you have like boxes of 45s and 78s?
Actually, when I started, yes, I did have the 45s, but then the CDs, you know, started coming out.
Right,
so,
right.
But I had every album that you could imagine almost on CD. I mean,
right.
From reggae all the way to country, 50s, 60s, and, now, of course, they're replaced by computers. But, it was a lot to carry out, you know, per event. And I had a light show, too, so obviously I charged more for that, but that made the show. I had a fog machine. I had a bubble machine. I had basically anything anybody wanted, so I could provide the service.
Do you still have all that music?
I do have.
Boy, what a library.
Yes,
that is amazing.
I do have. I have probably 5,000 CDs, if not more. And it's just tucked away in the closet, you know, not collecting dust because it's covered. But
right. Now, do you sometimes get a wee urge to, I wish I could go tonight and do a wee gig?
As a matter of fact, I've changed jobs obviously since then too, and now my hours have changed. So now I've got every Friday and Saturday night off. So I've already told my wife I've got the itch to get back into it. Now, of course, I'd have to buy all the new music since I've
And I think we're in an age now where things are changing so quickly. So you'd maybe buy some equipment and then it'd be like, well, you don't need that anymore. You just need to use this iPhone,
right? The iPhone. Thing. Yep, or even a laptop. You know, you can go on to Napster or whatever, and you can, I think you pay a certain price, whatever, for all the songs that you want, and you just search it, and you can just play it.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah, so I wouldn't have to carry all the heavy CDs
anymore.
You can
turn up a briefcase.
Yeah, more. I think I had like 8 briefcases.
Wow.
And now you just need to turn up with something in your pocket.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know? Yeah.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
It is.
Think about
it. It is.
It's amazing. Any song you want, you can pull it right up in an instant. What were your favorite events to cover?
I would say weddings. Because not only is it an important day for me, not only because I'm making money and I'm making everybody happy, but it's an important day for them. And I always met with the bride and groom even months before the wedding just to go over, you know, who's in the bridal party, who's mom and dad, who's, you know, any special songs they want. And then I usually met with them like a week or two before the wedding just to see if anything's changed. Because, you know, something happens where, you know, a DJ is not notified of any something small, like, say, you know, Grandpa George passed away and Grandpa George was going to give me away and now he's not there and I announce it and then I was like, wait a minute, now that's not.
Yeah, or you play something inadvertently insensitive or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. And this was in the 80s that you were DJing?
Yeah.
I
Sorry, Mike. Did you have a mullet?
When I was DJing, no, but when I was in high school, I did.
Business in front, party in the back.
Yeah, there you go.
I grew up in the 80s, and I have distinct memories of my uncle getting married and then my aunt getting married. And those 80s weddings and the music and, like you're saying, the fog machine. As a little kid, you know, 4 years old, 8 years old, seeing this, like, cloudy dance floor to me. It was so cool. Yeah. It was such a fun experience.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're really, when you're a DJ, you're making memories for people that
last.
That's
true. Yeah, I never thought of that. Yeah.
I use the theater and the music background, too, from when I was a kid and even in college to bring forth, you know, to if I'm not having any fun, then nobody else is. That's sure. what my philosophy was.
Did you ever get into, like, mixing songs? You know, like, you know, I think
like,
one of the,
like, scratching.
No. The kind of lap dissolve, if you like, of one song, seamless.
Sometimes I've done that.
You don't really know that song's finished and this one started.
Yeah. I didn't really get into it as far as, like, you know, dance music or so. But, like, if I played, like, a fast song into a slow song, yeah, I wouldn't say anything in between. I would just go with it.
I used to go to nightclub when I was like 86, and I'd try, you know, the slow songs would start coming on about 15 minutes before the nightclub lights come up, and you tried to dance with the girl that you liked, you know, at a fast song, just about 20 minutes too, just so you could try and time it so that you could say, just want to stay up, you know, and maybe get a slow dance off, you know, a wee kiss and stuff.
Yeah. As a DJ, it is an art because, you know, you want to keep people on the dance floor. You want to keep people going. And if you play something that's, you know, it kills the crowd, then now you have to, you know, kind of go back and say, okay, well, I got to play this now in order to get them going.
Did you play the Hokey Pokey?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
What about the Chicken Dance?
Yes.
No kidding.
Yes.
I thought that was maybe just a Western New York thing, but maybe it's in all weddings.
No, I was doing all of the group, you know, songs, games, whatever, back then. Yep.
The good old songs before, like, the Macarena days and the Electric Slide.
Well, there's, you know, in Glasgow, there's songs that there's a song called, a dance called the Slosh, and all these, like, women, middle-aged women would get up on stage and do this kind of orchestrated dance. I don't know who taught them how to do it, but they would, it was almost like a line dance, you know, and there's always punctuated, there was always a drunk guy at the back trying to be funny and try to do it with them and making a hen end of himself. Mm-hmm. But was there a dance? Was there an equivalent in America where, you know, at a certain point in a family party or a kind of colloquial party where the women would all gather on stage and say, right, we want you to play this song so we can all dance this certain way?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, another song that comes to mind would be Paradise by the Dashboard Lights. A lot of the, you know, when they have the baseball scene towards the end of the song, you know, the guys and the girls line up against each other and they play the whole, you know, baseball scene, stop right there, you know, and it's just amazing to watch these people do that. And I don't have to do anything. They do it all.
Yeah, yes.
You know?
You know, it's from Greece.
Yes.
But yeah.
For some reason, and at parties in Glasgow, at the end of the day, at the end of the night, have these all drunk, they'd in a big circle, and Frank Sinatra be on, New York, New York.
Yeah.
And I always imagined that parties in Glasgow, in New York somewhere, there's like all these drunk people in a big circle, I belong to Glasgow! You know?
Yeah. Every party that I DJed, I tried to finish with the same song every time, and I usually played Donna Summer, The Last Dance. It's a slow song, but then it starts to beat up a little bit more and then it ends on a really good note.
Right.
So that was one of the ones that stuck out.
Shall we play the song Brick House?
By the way, we were going to play a song here.
All right. So this all started with you mentioning that one of your favorite songs, Brick House. So this is it. Brick House by the Commodores.
What a winning hand, cause she's a
fancy ways. Make an old man wish for younger days, yeah.
Was the Commodore's Brick House. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Just a reminder that at any point, if you're listening, that you would like to help the station reach its goals, both financially and commercially, please don't hesitate to reach out to the station and help us keep this great station on the air. The next item we have is a wedding ring.
Yes, wedding rings are very important. When you are in any kind of, I wouldn't say desperate situation, but you know, whenever you're thinking about who could help you out during a decision or whatever the case may be, I always tend to look at my hand and look at my wedding ring. And one thing that my grandfather and my father always...
So is it a source of comfort?
It's a source of comfort knowing that my wife would support me no matter what.
What would she say? What would she do in this situation?
Right, exactly. And I just find myself on numerous occasions sometimes just to look at that ring and really appreciate what I have and what I, you know... Not really couldn't have, but, you know, in other words, it could be in a different situation, could be, you know, not with my wife and I, you know, love her and appreciate her enough that she, you know, puts her two cents into everything that I do, whether I like it or not, you know, and we always talk about that, right. You know, it's a win-win situation with her.
Now, what hand do you wear your ring in?
On my left hand.
Now, couples in England, France and the United States wear their wedding rings on their left hand, but the couples in India, Germany, Russia, for example, prefer the right hand.
Really?
Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
I did not know that.
And the tradition of both the bride and the groom wearing wedding rings only began during World War II, when men began wearing rings to remember their wives back home.
Mm-hmm. No kidding.
So... Huh. World War One people didn't have wedding rings.
Yeah.
All right, quiz time now. Quiz time. The most popular shape of a diamond ring. What is it?
Of the diamond.
Yes.
The shape of the diamond.
I'm going to go with circle.
Circle?
I'm going to say oval.
Oval. You're saying oval.
Oval.
And Mike, can you expand on that?
The... diamond that looks round.
Close.
What's sad is I was something of an expert on this a couple of years ago when I had to know it, when I proposed to my wife. So I knew all the shapes and all the different, you know, the scale of clarity and I don't know, whatever else it is. Now it has all escaped me. But I'm going with circle, round.
Round, brilliant cut.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I guess I lost.
I don't know what the brilliant means, though. I don't remember.
Now, every year, the United States sees this amount of tons of gold turned into wedding rings. Take a guess, Don.
Hmm. Hmm.
I have to push you now.
Yeah.
How many tons?
I would say to make one ring.
No, no. How many tons of gold to make wedding rings in general?
Oh, in a given year?
Yeah.
20?
I would say like a half a ton.
17 tons.
Holy smokes, no kidding.
Wow. So well done there, Don. That's a good
That's
guess.
A lot of gold. Yeah. On the other hand, gold is really heavy. Your next item, you're bringing your favorite blanket to your to the cabin in the Catskills. How come, Don?
We have heirlooms in our family that, hands down from generation to generation. And one of the blankets that's a favorite of mine is my great-grandmother's.
Seriously?
And I still use it today.
Wow.
It's very comfortable. It's handmade.
Do you like to maybe sit in a rainy day underneath the blanket watching an old movie or something?
Yes. Snuggle up in front of the TV with the wife and just, and it's got a certain smell to it. Not like a bad smell, but just like an old smell, but not a musty smell. It's just one of those things that you just have to kind of, I guess, experience and know where it came from and who made it. That would definitely bring back some, memories of my grandmother and years ago and growing up and going to her house. And, that would really hit home.
I've got my grandfather's cap.
Okay.
I've had it for maybe close to 25 years. No, maybe 28 years now. And if I try hard enough, I can still smell the hair cream that you used.
Okay, the hair cream, yeah.
It's called Brill Cream. I can still smell it on it. And if I close my eyes, I can see them for a couple of seconds,
Yeah.
Have you guys ever had a wool blanket?
I've had one, but not to be, to my heart or special. I mean, yes, they are warmer.
Yeah, traditionally, blankets are made of wool because of wool's warmth, its breathability, and natural fire retardant properties. Back in the good old days when people had candles and open flames in the house, it was nice to have something that wouldn't burst.
Catch fire.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I had a wool blanket growing up. My dad got one for me, and it was itchy. It's not a really comfortable material, but it is. It's really warm. It's kind of this miracle material. A lot of Civil War uniforms,
I believe. Should it was the fleas?
Were made out of wool. Well, it could have been. We would have our biweekly bathing. That would usually get rid of the fleas, but in between, they seem to come back.
Right.
Little pests. So traditionally made of wool.
Can I just ask, see what these pure wool things, maybe a sheepskin coat or something?
Yeah.
You always get that smell. It kind of smells like the animal.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wool generally, it doesn't hold body odor. So, I'm into backpacking and hiking. I have some synthetic shirts, polyester and whatever. Yep. Those are great in that they wick away your sweat. They dry very quickly. They keep you cool, but they get funky. They're gross.
Yeah.
Wool, though, it has kind of the same properties. Doesn't smell. Generally speaking. So they used them a lot in the Civil War. Guys would wear these, thick wool uniforms into battle, and they would get wet and then keep the guys cool, or in the wintertime, help to keep them warm.
Right.
And the term blanket arose from a gentleman named Thomas Blanket, who was a Flemish weaver who lived in Bristol, England in the 14th century.
Where is Bristol, Mike?
In the south of England.
Well done.
Yes. He's learning.
You're such a geographical wizard.
Well,
he's getting there.
Studying up for when I go to visit. And
Whoa. You're going to go over there and go to England?
Along the way. After I go to Scotland first.
Yeah, good.
Good answer.
You're going to try haggis.
I'm going
to
fly into Glasgow.
Haggis.
I'm going to try some haggis.
Black pudding.
After I throw up and wake up.
I've had some haggis before.
You have?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, actually.
Good, man.
It was through the Masons, the Freemasonry.
Oh, right.
Yeah, there's a degree that they have that they serve haggis.
Right. I'm finding it hard to swallow now that we're talking about the Masons, but...
Yeah.
To get back to your great-grandmother's blanket, you're taking it there. It's kind of sentimental security and something that brings some familiarity to you.
Yes.
And those times when there could be an axe murderer outside at the cabin.
Mm. Yes. Oh, yes.
Which, of course, there won't be.
No.
But it's nice to have the security blanket there. And then you could always refer back to that photo album. And you didn't really tell us about that photo album. Like, what kind of pictures? Is this a particular album that you have?
yes and no. I mean, it's a, you know, like we all, you know, have pictures of our childhood and, you know, going camping as a kid, and there really isn't any particular photos that stand out, but obviously my grandparents and, you know, my father has gone, and, you know, just to, you know, reminisce and go through the book is just, you know, heartwarming.
Sure. And again, it kind of brings that, you know, we had a guest on a year or two ago, and she talked about bringing pictures with her, and she says, you know, in those moments when you're feeling lonely or sad, you can look at a picture and it can just help you escape, and oh, I remember that time, and you know, that was great. Yeah. And it kind of helps you lift your spirits.
I've actually looked at pictures before, especially with my dad, and you know, just say, hey, dad, what would you do in this situation? You know, like, I'll find myself not cornered, but just, okay, you know, do I choose A or do I choose B, and what would be the consequences? And you know, somehow he doesn't talk to me right there and then, but eventually it comes back to me, and then I know he's geared me into the right way.
His sage-like words would come to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
In those types of situations, music from the Florida Georgia Line group, Holy, for example, your next song, that maybe can have a kind of a calming, soothing, comforting appeal. Why are you bringing that song?
Well, again, you know, going back to the wedding ring and so on and so forth, you know, the wedding ring doesn't have a beginning or an end. And the song Holy kind of reminds me of, you know, my relationship with my wife and how, you know, she's cherished me, I've cherished her, and that, you know, she's basically put me on cloud nine since I met her 19 years ago. We've been married 17 years. Actually, I'm sorry, it'll be 18 years this October. It's just been an amazing ride. You know, we go from you know, your first starter apartment to your house to now we built a house 10 years ago, and there's still some things we want to change over time, but the one thing that hasn't changed is our love for each other, and this song that came out by Florida Georgia Line just kind of hits home, and it speaks truth of our relationship.
When the sun had left and the winter came and the sky fall to only bring the rain, I sat in darkness, all brokenhearted. I couldn't find a day, I didn't feel alone. I never meant to cry, started losing hope, but somehow, baby, you broke through and saved me. You're an angel, tell me you're never leaving, 'cause you're the first thing I know I can believe in. You're whole. Nights, you're the riverbank where I was baptized, cleansed from the demons that were killing my freedom. Let me lay you down, give me to ya, get you singing, babe, hallelujah. We'll be touching heaven. You're an angel, tell me you're never leaving, 'cause you're the first thing I know. Can't believe.
holding hands where it used to hurt. You're my saving grace, you're my kind of church. You're holy.
That was Holy by Florida Georgia Line. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra. That's 90.7 FM. Today on the show, talking about items and songs to take to his cabin in the Catskills, we have Don Skimmerhorn. Don, thanks again for being with us today.
Sure, no problem, Mike.
Your next item is your favorite sweater. Why take that?
Well, as we all know, that the Catskills in the mountains can be kind of chilly at night, and kind of like a blanket, you would want to snuggle up on a couch and maybe reminisce about things in your past, in your life. And I have a sweater that I don't obviously wear anymore, but I do have a sweater that has been made for me specifically, again, from my grandmother. And she was just a terrific woman, growing up. And when my parents had to work, of course, my grandmother watched me. And you don't think of things like this when you're younger, but as you're older and you get, married yourself and have kids yourself, you really do appreciate the heirlooms that, you've carried with you from year to year and decade to decade. And, one of the things that would really reminisce in my mind to take me back in a days would be a sweater that my grandmother made. It really isn't any special sweater, like the reindeer doesn't, the nose doesn't glow or anything. But
I was going to say, is it one of those ugly ones?
No, it's not really. It's just basically one color. It's red, and it's just just the way she made it. And it's just.
So was it made for you when you were a kid?
Yes.
So if you try to put it on right now, you'd be like a zombie. You'd be standing there, couldn't move. Yeah. Yeah, is it made of wool?
No. No, it's made of cotton.
All right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Now, sweaters have been worn since the late 19th century. That's when they really took off. The 1800s were a pioneering time for style. I guess every decade, every century, they have their own unique style. But so sweaters, late 1800s. But holiday versions only began to sprout up in the last several decades in the United States. Bill Cosby,
he was
a major ugly sweater guy. That was his kind of trademark. Chevy Chase in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yep, I remember that one.
Had the ugly Christmas sweaters. December 15th, 2017, is National Ugly Christmas Sweater Day.
Wow.
And I find it a little charming, actually. Because with some of the genuinely ugly ones, there are also some that are kind of ugly, but then really cool. There are some with like Star Wars themes.
But they're ugly. They're cool in their ugliness.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you can pull that off. And now you can buy ugly sweaters all over the place. It's right. Not...
I see an ugly sweater parade in your future.
I might. That would
I
be
could
great.
See him button at a radio station somewhere. Like he's the live. Voice of the ugly sweater parade.
Yeah, live remote, yeah.
And here he comes. It's John from Vermont. He's representing...
A disappointing turnout this year. His sweater is entirely too attractive. He went with something from the L.L. Bean line, which just doesn't live up. Sad day today for ugly sweaters.
Mike, do you have an ugly sweater?
I don't. I guess that's open
that's,
to...
That's what you think.
Yeah. Interpretation, yeah.
Open to interpretation. Yeah. Me being in the sweater might be enough just to make it ugly.
So you've never thought, in school at Christmas time, I'll wear a sweater with like Rudolph on it or something like that?
I never have, but now I am. Now I'm thinking that I might try to pull it off and see what happens.
One ugly sweater comes to mind when I was in school during a certain concert. It was mixed with six different pictures on the front. And it was like snowflakes and reindeer and, Santa Claus and, just holiday stuff. And now that I look back upon, that day, I'm like, why would I wear such a thing? But
Well, that's the thing. That's the great thing about fashion, isn't it? As Mike said right at the beginning when he was mentioning this, when you look back to like the 70s and stuff like that, the guys had the long mutton chop sideburns and the flares on, the shirts had the wide collar and stuff like lapels and stuff, and then you go to the 80s and people have got mullets,
you guys are wearing short shorts and tube socks pulled up to their knees.
Here's one for you: parachute pants.
What are parachute pants? I don't remember.
Those were the pants that had the little Velcro tabs on the side that you pulled towards the front to make it look like an MC Hammer type of pant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Those. big legs.
And did you see you guys on the dance floor with them on?
Oh, yeah.
Thinking they were cool?
Yeah.
Wow. Have you guys ever seen Icelandic sweaters?
No.
Usually made out of wool. They're really cool. My sister and her husband went to Iceland for their anniversary to Reykjavik, and they got these sweaters. And those are pretty neat. They're really thick, robust, and they have usually pretty cool designs on them. Mm-hmm. Pretty classy, so... That's something. If you don't want an ugly sweater,
get
an Icelandic one.
It's probably pretty pricey, too, if I can imagine. Yeah, I mean, anything that's going to keep you warm is going to be a good investment.
When I was a teenager, there was these T-shirts called Y cardigans, and it was like these American-type cardigans with a Y on it, and it was I think the Y stood for Yale College, Yale University. Yeah. And they were just, at the time, you're like, oh, they're fantastic. So you look back, you're like, oh, look at the state of that. I remember my aunt Isa made knitted these sweaters that were like yellow and black stripes. They looked like bumblebees. And she knitted them for her sons, and then her sons were like 4 years, 5 years older than us, and then they grew out of them, and we got them, me and my brother Brian. We were to look like idiots, 5 years later.
Yeah.
Those
are the kinds of pictures that come up, when you're turning 50 or, your 50th wedding anniversary or whatever, something
exactly,
like that.
Exactly, yeah, the wall of shame.
Exactly.
So Don, when you're sitting there in your cabin recollecting in your sweater with your blanket wrapped around you, looking at your photo album, listening to this music, the last song that's going to come up when you hear that serial killer trying to break down the door is Garth Brooks' If Tomorrow Never Comes.
Yes, Garth Brooks is definitely... entertainer of all time. If Tomorrow Never Comes is a song, if you don't know this, is a song about the future and how Garth being together with his wife at the time, and if one goes to heaven and one still stays back, and how he could cope with being alone. So this song, obviously I don't want to say anything towards the future that this will happen to me, but just to listen to this song is definitely a comfort song that comes to my heart. And I know Garth Brooks has been out of the sink for about 10 years, and he has a new wife now, Trisha Yearwood, and they're actually starting to tour together themselves, as a matter of fact, this month, and they're coming up to the Times Union Building in Albany, I believe, in June. That's March, sorry. And hopefully we can maybe get some tickets and go see the man live, because
have you ever seen him live?
No, I haven't, but I know that he sold out Meadowlands Arena at 109,000 people for just one concert. So the Times Union Building, I think, only holds about 10 or even 12,000. So
you better hurry up.
Yeah, exactly.
Better get in the front of the queue.
get the tickets now, I guess.
Sometimes late at night, I lie awake and watch her sleeping. She's lost in peaceful dreams, so I turn out the lights and lay there in the dark. And the thought crosses my mind, if I never wake up in the morning, would she ever doubt the way I feel about her in my heart? If tomorrow never comes, will she know how much I love? Did I try in every way to show her every day that she's my only one? And if my time on earth were through, she must face this world without me. Is the love I gave her in the past gonna be enough to last? If tomorrow never comes, 'cause I've lost loved ones in my life who never knew how much I loved them. Now I live with the regret that my true feelings for them never were revealed. So I made a promise to myself to say today how much she means to me, and avoid that circumstance where there's no second chance to tell her how I feel. 'Cause if tomorrow never comes, will she know how much I loved her? Did I try in every way to show her every day that she's my only one? And if my time on earth were through, she must face this world without me. Is the love I gave her in the past gonna be enough to last if tomorrow never comes? So tell that someone that you love just what you're thinking of if tomorrow never comes.
That was If Tomorrow Never Comes, Garth Brooks. Now, we're coming near to the end of the show, Don, but while we were listening to that song, you had a story that you'd wanted to tell us and you wanted to share with us about your DJing days and the importance of getting the correct information.
Communication.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. Back, I would say, probably in the mid to late 80s, I had received a phone call from a person who I didn't know. She had gotten my card from somebody, and they wanted me to DJ a private party. And I said, okay. So I took all the information down, and I asked them, you know, what type of, you know, music should I bring? And they said, you know, you can bring swing music. I'm like, okay, this is kind of different. So I actually had to go to the store and buy some because I didn't have much of it. And I get all the way out there, about an hour and a half away, and I start setting up, and I noticed that certain people were walking around with no clothes on. And I said to myself, I said, what in the heck is going on here? So the person who had hired me, I said, can you come over here, please? And they're like, yeah, what's the matter? And I'm like, well, nothing's really a matter, but I was just wondering, you told me to bring swing music. And I said, I brought it, but it doesn't look like this is the type of music to be playing at this party. And she said, oh, you didn't hear me. I said, it's a swingers party. And I'm like, no, you didn't tell me. So it was a little uncomfortable there for a while.
Did you leave or stay?
Well, I DJ'd, you know, the party. Yes, yeah, so to get the money, I got the job done. But I was out by the pool, and of course, I wasn't in any private areas, you know, to be playing music. But
you play that song, "Twisting by the Pool"?
I don't really know. No, I don't think I played that one. But you know, it was definitely a situation where if I had known ahead of time, I probably would not have taken the gig, so to speak. But you know, it is what it is.
Me, had I been a DJ, I'd be like, oh yeah,
you would have been there yesterday. Yeah.
2 years later, some little old lady.
Oh, this Don Skimmerhorn's a DJ. Let's have him for the swing party.
Dials up.
Hello, my name is Agnes. I would like you to DJ for our swing. Hello, Don.
Mike, you mentioned that because years after that, my wife and I were in the mall in Albany, and a certain person had walked by and remembered me from that party. And of course, my wife says, "Who is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, just somebody that I DJ'd 4 years ago.
Some swinger." Yeah.
And now Mrs. Skimmerhorn knows.
Yes.
Well, we've got to wrap it up. Don, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, it's been great.
You're welcome. It was a good show. I appreciate it.
We just have one more question for you.
Okay.
How do you take your coffee?
I don't take coffee at all because if you ask my wife, I don't make it, I don't drink it, and I don't clean it. The smell or taste of coffee just turns me off. I mean, I'd rather have hot chocolate in the middle of the summertime when it's 105, but coffee, no, it's a big turn off for me.
Gosh, coffee hour at church must be torture.
No, I usually take the kids' juice and the cookies.
I'm really upset now.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I was on your Christmas card list. Now I'm off, right? Yeah.
That's it. I'm buying you a lovely sweater just to annoy you. Yeah.
Well, Don, thank you again so much.
Sure. Hi, I'm Don Scamahorn, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC, thank you very much.